Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the iSports MSU Red Theater Report. I am Tyler Hayward. We're here to talk about another depressing weekend of Michigan State football. We're going to talk about the game against U of M. A lot of people taking it as a moral victory. We'll talk about that concept. Brian Lewerke, he's done for the year. We'll talk about that a little bit later as well. With me today to do that is Grant Essenmacher. Before we get started, though, just a reminder, you can follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at Red Theater Report to listen to our past shows. Great group of guests we had last week. We had Will Whitaker, DeAndre Cobb, Trevin Pendleton, Tyler Toplinski, Kyle Rasmussen, just all fantastic interviews. Great to talk to all those guys over the course of last week, their history with Michigan, and some of their favorite moments in the rivalry as well. Like I said, Grant Essenmacher today, and you know what, Grant, I guess there's really just one thing I can take away from the Michigan game. At least we have Miles Bridges.
You know, that's my calling card, too. I think I said that a couple times on Saturday. That was one of my comments as well.
Well, we were at the tailgate, and a lot of you who do listen, you're in the Michigan State recruiting group on Facebook, and so you know that's where some of the guys who, or the guy who started that group, Ryan McCumber, that's where he tailgates at, and that's kind of where we kind of set ourselves between the Breslin Center and the football stadium, and there was a solid amount of blue lined up for the tailgates, and say one of the members of our tailgate party got a little lubed up. Might be a bit of an understatement, but when the basketball team made their, you know, weekly walk over to Spartan Stadium for the game, this member of our group just stands up and goes, "Hey, Michigan fans, this is what a real basketball team looks like." So at least MSU has that going for them, but then not to jinx it or play devil's advocate here, but kind of thought that about the football team coming into this year. We didn't think they would take as big of a step back as they did. But let's talk about this weekend's game. A lot of people even Michigan State fans, I thought, were a little too excited about the outcome.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, you know, the whole moral victory argument, and I've seen a couple people say that, and, you know, they're like, okay, well, at least we kept it close. And my feeling on it is this: listen, you're playing your in-state rival who not only is in your division and your conference, but you battle for with recruits. I mean, you know, there's so many factors that go into it.
And it is
about
the biggest recruiting
victory
weekend of the year, usually.
Right. And so if you're talking about moral victories, there's no such thing as a moral victory against Michigan. That's the way I feel about it. I know that they played better, and you can look at that and be encouraged for the rest of the year that Michigan State did play a little bit better than they have been in the past. But against Michigan, there's no moral victories. If they don't win, then it's a loss, and a loss is a loss. It doesn't count. The win-loss column is a moral victory, and a loss is a loss. And I hate the moral victory argument. I've never liked it really for anything. You know, you can say a team played better, but the whole moral victory thing is just one of my least favorite arguments, really, in all across sports.
Yeah, look at it right now. Michigan State the NFL. Michigan State's not 2-5-1. There's no ties for a moral victory. You're still 2-6. You need, well, now given what I feel is an extensive amount of bowls, I've way overblown. But now you can get into a bowl game with a 5-7 record. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But I'm right there with you. And you look at the play, where R.J. Shelton, he had that jet sweep. The one that lost 6 yards, got tackled by Glasgow. 77, I don't know who it is because I tried to look it up on U of M's roster. And he was listed as an offensive lineman, so the guy more than likely switched positions, or there's a different number like Michigan State does with some of their guys over the past 2 years. I think to kind of throw a little curveball at U of M, they did it with Shalique Calhoun, but Calhoun said he wanted to pay tribute to Ted Davis, who was missing the season last year. Donnie Corley wore 29 instead of 9. And again, that isn't necessarily a curveball thing. That's so he can play defense with Monte Nicholson. Can't have two guys with the same numbers out there. But anyways, 77. Well, let's just say he looks like the last guy to wear 77 for U of M. He looks like Taylor Lewan out there. He kicked R.J. Shelley. Go back and watch it. There's a slow-motion clip circling online. It is kind of tough to find, though, and I can't exactly remember where it was, but it looks like he kicked R.J. Shelton in the stomach. And that right there, there's no moral victories because you got beat up and then you had your face thrown in the dirt a little bit more because of the bull crap that goes on during the course of this game. There's no moral victories. You beat him or you don't.
Right.
Paul Bunyan and Sidney Slansing, or he's not. And I'm not buying the whole moral victory thing. I think it's the stupidest thing in the world. It sounds a lot like Michigan fans over the last 3 years justifying every loss Michigan State handed them. Wait till next year. Harbaugh, or in their case it was, Santonio's not going to be around forever. Or, you know, just garbage like that. I mean, look, Michigan's a senior-laden team. And it looks like they're going to go through the same growing pains next season that Michigan State's suffering through this season. But I'm not waiting until next year. As a Spartan fan, I'm not waiting until next year. There's still a little bit to play for as far as experience. And I kind of got ripped yesterday when I went in to work the Sunday huddle at WSBT. I got ripped because I was like, I want Michigan State to go 5-7. I want that month. I want those 15 practices that come with it just because of how young the team is. And I made a point that, like, well, it's very Notre Dame-centric down here, that Notre Dame should do the same. You want to go to the – and get that experience for the younger guys. I don't care if they end up going 5-7 and playing – a team like, I don't know what the MAC looks like, but Toledo in the Little Caesars pizza, whatever bowl in Detroit.
Yeah, and you know, I've seen arguments too, same thing. We're talking about the moral victory thing and people saying that. I've also seen the same people, you know, say if Michigan State goes 5-7, they shouldn't accept the bowl bid. And that, again, I think that's just, you know, they're not really thinking when you make that argument. Those 15 extra practices or whatever the number is during that month are so critical, especially for a team that has gone to the youth movement, which we've talked about in the past couple of weeks, but it's officially here. It's about as here as it's ever going to get. He's playing just as much young guys as he is, as I've ever seen him, if not the most I've ever seen D'Antonio play in terms of youth. So, you know, those practices are going to help. The other area it helps too is just knowing that the season doesn't end after the last Big Ten game. Having to go through that month of practice and experience that and that grind, you know, you still have to be conditioned enough to go and play in that bowl game. And when that bowl game does become important down the road for the youth that are on the team right now, when they're older, they play in a more important bowl game, they're used to that grind of the season schedule. So I think that is also part of the reason why you definitely accept the bid at 5-7. And as a fan, if you're 5-7 going to a bowl game, you want that. The 5-7 teams last year that went to bowl games went 3-0. So it's not like it's that, you know, much of a slap in the face. If you get off of the spot, you accept it. It's an extra game. You can treat it like a scrimmage if you really want to look at it in those eyes as a fan. But at the same time, saying that the bowl streak's alive, you still go into bowl games even with a down year is so important for a program recruiting-wise. And it's important for just those young guys getting the extra time in practice, going through the motions again, getting the extra time with the coaches that you otherwise wouldn't get.
Well, look at Nebraska. Nebraska last year, I mean, they were kind of like Michigan State this season, a lot of close games. Michigan State, obviously, their close games look a little bit more like blowouts just given the fact that they do allow a late touchdown or a late field goal that seems to just completely extrapolate the difference at the end of the game. But Nebraska seems to be benefiting quite well from going to that bowl game and getting that extra practice with a new coach. And I'm not saying there's necessarily going to be new coaches on Michigan State's staff coming up, but look, that practice is helping Nebraska, and I know that we were going to talk about this a little bit earlier. Let's look at Michigan State, or a little bit later, rather. Let's look at Michigan State's schedule right now, because we did go off what I had lined up for the show format. I got a little carried away there. But, look, Michigan State, they need to beat Illinois. They need to get Rutgers. And then, let's say it's Penn State that they need to upset. Can they do something like that? Because I don't know if they can necessarily slow down JT Barrett. But is 5-7 achievable with this year's team, or are we looking at a 4-8 team at best right now?
You know, I think, first of all, if they were to lose to Illinois or Rutgers, even though the Illinois game is on the road, that would be about as low as it would get. Those two teams are just horrible. So, those losses, they need to win those games, not only for the fact that they want to go to a bowl game, but for the simple fact that those teams are the bottom feeders of the Big Ten, and you can't lose those games. In terms of the Penn State game, assuming they lose against Ohio State, which I think is a safe assumption at this point, if you look at the Penn State game, you know, last year it could end up being the same situation or a similar situation where Penn State's playing for something still, depending on what shakes out in the Big Ten East. I know they need a lot of help, especially for Michigan to lose a couple games, but if that were to be the case too, it would be very similar in terms of one team having a down year, one team having a pretty good year. But, you know, anytime you go to Happy Valley against a ranked Penn State team, or at least they're ranked right now, it's tough, and I think Ohio State proved that. Now, I think that Michigan State has actually played well on the road this year. If you look at their road games, they've actually done fairly decent outside of maybe the Maryland game. They played pretty, I thought, with the mistakes in Indiana, they still, if you look at their whole season, wasn't a bad game. Obviously, the Notre Dame game, they won that game. So they've played decently well on the road. You know, I think that they have a shot. I don't want to count them out. Penn State isn't Michigan or Ohio State. If I had to say right now, I don't think that they end up winning that game. But it wouldn't surprise me if they did win the game. That's the way I'll put it. And especially if D'Antonio can psych them up enough to where they are looking for that fifth win to play in a bowl game, I think that that's a fair argument to make if they can get pumped up enough to win that game. Because given, you know, the APR score, they probably would make the bowl game at 5-7. So if they are a motivated Michigan State team in Happy Valley, you know, later on in November, then I think that it's possible for them to win that game for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing is Mark D'Antonio talked about most of this team being born on third, thinking they hit a triple. I think being 4-7 heading into Happy Valley, I think that would be an ideal situation where he can help chip that they've thrown on their shoulder, that chip that they've had on their workout apparel all summer or all fall throughout the course of the season. I think that he can find that chip and he can put it back on this team's shoulders. He can show the younger guys, look, this is what it's like to play with a little bit of a fire. This is something that maybe we haven't necessarily played with throughout the course of the season. It's not necessarily that they're not playing the games without the fire, but look, I was always told growing up, I was a big basketball guy, practice doesn't make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect. You play the way in games like you practice. I've seen very talented basketball players get benched. Their attitude in practice, the way they practiced, they didn't bring it. But when game time showed up, I'm sitting there and I'm watching these games. I'm like, man, how's this guy not getting any minutes? And I'm talking to coaches and everything else, and it's like, oh, well, he's not working hard enough in practice. It doesn't matter. And so I think that that's part of it, is this team might have come into the practices a little bit expecting to, you know, be gifted a chance to defend their Big Ten title in Indianapolis, and that's not the case right now. Let's go back to the Michigan game, though, and talk about it. I mean, we said there's no moral victories, but the running game punched Michigan in the mouth from the opening drive on. They absolutely dominated U of M up front with what has been arguably the worst unit in the Big Ten thus far. Arguably. We said against Maryland, we thought it was kind of a flash-in-the-pan type deal because Maryland's not very good on their front seven. They look good against Michigan. L.J. Scott looked good against Michigan. He did have to slip a couple of tackles around the line of scrimmage, and then he'd break one. But I thought for the most part they played pretty well. Pass protection still a bit of an issue, but these guys are starting to open up holes for the running backs.
Right, right. And it was what was extremely encouraging is that not only did they play well, they played well against probably the best defensive front four, at least, the best defensive line in the Big Ten. So you're not only playing well, you're playing well against, you know, really good competition. But in terms of L.J. Scott, you know, I've said this before, and I think it's still kind of ringing true. And we've kind of gotten on L.J.'s case a little bit throughout this year. But he seems to play his best football in big games. If you look at the Iowa game last year, especially at the end, and now you look at this game, and, you know, he had 22 carries for 100. Ohio State last year is really good. So 22 carries for 139 yards. I mean, those are the numbers that you're looking for in a workhorse running back. And so I think that's, you know, that's a very encouraging sign. But I think in terms of Michigan State as a whole, it seems they still are going back and forth week to week between Holmes and Scott. And last week against Michigan, you know, you have the – we're going to talk about the coaching, I believe, soon. But, you know, the goal line stand where they run the ball four times, or the fourth down at midfield where they give the ball to Holmes instead of L.J. Scott. I just, if you're going to go for a fourth down and run it, and you have one guy that's played really well and a guy that has yet to find his rhythm in that game, I mean, and not – beside the fact that L.J. Scott's a better power runner in a fourth and short situation, I mean, I didn't understand why Holmes got that carry, but – L.J. did, especially on the first drive where they did come out and kind of send a message to Michigan that Michigan wasn't just going to come in at Indy East Lansing and just roll through Michigan State without much effort. You know, they did send a message, and I liked that. I thought it was encouraging. If they can run the ball, we're going to talk about quarterbacks too, but if they can run the ball in the future, that's going to take so much pressure off what is a murky quarterback situation, to put it lightly. So, you know, I think it's very important for them to be able to find that. And if this is a sign that they did find that, then it's very encouraging going forward in the future and into next year with a lot of these young guys going to be back. So, you know, I think that's really encouraging sign.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think Michigan allowed 100 yards rushing in the game. I'm not 100% sure. 99% sure it's not been at least a 100-yard rusher. A 100-yard individual rusher. On fourth and short, though, I totally understand giving the ball to Holmes. That's where I'm going to differ with you. I think that Holmes is a better fourth and short runner just because he keeps his legs moving all the time. That's something that I don't think he's ever really had a problem with. Since he came to Michigan State, L.J. Scott, we talked about how he runs tight, he gets hit, and then he has to try to turn his body. The way Michigan swarms, that's not the best way to go about things. Now, where I am going to agree with you is on that fourth and short on the play, it should have been L.J. Scott, because if you're going to pitch it to the outside, you want a guy who's got a little more speed, Scott, instead of Holmes. And that's where I'll agree with you. But I think that you're absolutely right. And let's talk about the coaching, though, because it's easy on that goal line stand. That's 100% on the coaches. Look, you sit there and you're able to spread out Michigan a little bit. Michigan State had some success running power formations, but when you're in a goal line situation, Michigan's already going to sell out against the run. They're going to sell out against the run, against a run-heavy team, which Michigan State is, especially when, at that point, O'Connor only threw the ball once. 10 times?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's 10, but that was O'Connor's number when he got pulled. And so, of course, Michigan's going to sell out against the run because that's all you've been doing on them. And I get we talked about how it did work, but you don't keep the defense honest that way. You can sit there, you can run the ball 99 times out of 100 during the course of a game. But at the end of the game, I mean, this wasn't an end-of-the-game situation, but at the end of the game, if Michigan needs to stop or whatever, and you run the ball, I mean, Michigan knows it's coming. And so they knew that based on percentages, Michigan State was probably going to run the ball on the goal line, and so it was easier to sell out against it. They didn't spread it at all. They sat there and said, we're going to try to punch you in the mouth, and then they decided to pitch it on 4th and 1 when going over the top is a better choice. I mean, you got a chance for a home run, but it lowers your percentages by quite a bit because Michigan is very fast on defense. I mean, you look at it, you saw him pick up that 2-point conversion and take that thing to the house. He's one of the fastest linebackers in the country. You can't go outside on that garbage. You really can't. And to kind of piggyback off of that, just 10 attempts with O'Connor again, and then they decide to start whipping the ball around once O'Connor goes out. I don't know about you, Grant, but I'm getting pretty fed up with this Dave Warner stuff when it comes to Tyler O'Connor.
Right. Yeah. O'Connor seems, is just not really given much of a chance now. Obviously, for the rest of the year with the work out, I would assume that O'Connor is going to be the guy, and very rarely is he going to come out of the game. We saw David Terry worked out. I have no idea why he even played any at all. But, you know,
oh,
was,
my God.
Like
just
I
put
said,
him in a slot and call it a day, man.
Right. I have no idea why he even played at all. But I think the coaching staff as a whole just did a complete disservice to the players, given how hard and how well the players played. I mean, there were so many decisions that were bad. And then you talk about the 4th and 1 where you run it 4 times. To kind of piggyback off that point, not only are you running it 4 times, but you're running it two things. A, we talked about this pre-show. O'Connor has one of the highest quarterback ratings in the country, or the highest quarterback rating in the country at play action. So why don't you go play action? You have two really good red zone tight ends in Jamal Lyles and Josiah Price. You have two guys that are very good, big targets in the red zone. It just seems so obvious what the play call should be to fans, to analysts, to everybody. And yet there's one man who's making the decision that doesn't seem to call the right play. And so that's just like, it's so baffling to me why he can't understand
play action on second
understand.
Down because – we talked about Michigan. They can get after the quarterback. They sack you. So what? You're in 3rd and 6. You have Donnie Corley. You have Josiah Price. LJ
right.
Scott can catch the ball out of the backfield. Belton Williams can catch the ball out of the backfield. Prescott Lyon can catch the ball out of the backfield. You play action
right.
on second down. If you get sacked, eat it. You're 3rd and 7. It's not unmanageable.
Right. And with I know we were running the ball well, but given Michigan's run defense, I mean – I just don't understand how you don't even try to pass once. I mean, at some point, you got to try something besides handing the ball off. Or the pitch was stupid. I mean, Michigan's speed on the outside on defense, like you mentioned. Maybe Peppers, we already talked about. But their speed is on defense as a whole is really good. So that was just
mm-hmm.
baffling to me. But, you know, you talked about it, and I hope it changes. But it just seems like Michigan State's game plan, every game has been very similar. Come out and establish the run. And because that's the case, O'Connor – ends up in the second or third quarter with very minimal opportunity to establish himself as a threat passing the ball. And then in the middle of the second or third quarter, the game's close, they figure, oh, it's O'Connor's fault, so we're going to take O'Connor out of the game. That's the trend that I'm seeing. And so
yeah.
I just don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of talked about that too.
It's the same thing we complained about with BYU. BYU, 3.5 quarters in, O'Connor's got 10 attempts. Oh, well, we're not moving the ball. I wonder why. 2.5 quarters in against Michigan. Oh, we stopped moving the ball. I wonder why. Is it because Michigan got a little too acclimated to the run game? Because LJ Scott did most of that damage in the first drive. Not even the first quarter or first half. He did it most of it on the first drive. He had a couple long breaks after that, but he was starting to get slowed down a little bit. And you look at it, 10 times through 2.5 quarters, 4 completions, 34 yards. And then everyone's like, oh, well, Lewerke played better. Of course Lewerke played better. It's the same thing that we talked about with Notre Dame. Look, why did Notre Dame come back?
Right. Well, we played prevent defense, and then we turned around, hand the ball 3 times and punt. I mean, that's really what happened. And
yeah.
We didn't.
Yeah, well,
right.
We played that prevent defense. Kizer finally had time. He was able to throw the ball, and everyone's like, hey, Lewerke
right.
played good. Well, guess what? When Lewerke got hurt, when Terry got hurt, O'Connor looked pretty good. Michigan was in that prevent. O'Connor, 3 for 4, 50 yards and touchdown. In his second set, if you want to call it. So let's stop acting like Lewerke's been bailing this team out. All right? If you want a true litmus test of how Lewerke's played, go to Maryland. Go to the Maryland game. He played the full game. There was pressure on him. His numbers, 11-24, 156 in a pick. Look, we've talked about it. Best arm, best runner. I think the kid's going to be special. But those numbers against Maryland, but people are looking at these games where he's coming in against prevent defenses and like, God, Lewerke, he's so amazing. What? You got four down rushers, everybody else dropping back into coverage, and he has room to run, and you think he's impressive? It's no different than O'Connor. O'Connor looked pretty good against the prevent against Michigan.
Yeah, it would not have bothered me if they started Lewerke against Michigan. I said this
right
a couple weeks back, and I still believe it. If you're gonna, whoever you start, just stick with that guy. Give him a chance to go a full game and have him be your guy for that game. If Lewerke was that guy, you should have started him early on. It shouldn't have been O'Connor. And so, you know what I'm saying? Like, if O'Connor's that guy, you got to stick with him too. It doesn't give your quarterback any sense of confidence if you know he knows he's just going to get pulled in the second half.
Yeah, it's brutal right now. And so, I mean, I guess the question is now, is where does Michigan State go from here? Look, I know I'm defending O'Connor. At the same time, I understand where the season is right now, where it's headed. I would have said start Lewerke for the experience. Mm-hmm. Because, look, him and O'Connor, they're even in my book. I thought O'Connor's senior leadership maybe gives him a little bit of better chance in closer games. But as far as overall, and I think that experience is why they're even, because I think O'Connor makes the better decision. Where does MSU go from here with Lewerke out for the season?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we talked about why Damian Terry should never play quarterback again for Michigan State, and I still believe that. But obviously, right now, given that the fact that Lewerke's out, it's got to be O'Connor. You know, people are talking about Masai DeWeaver maybe, and there's no reason to burn that red shirt for four games. I don't see them doing that.
For a long season.
Right, yeah, that's not going to happen. So, I think that Kohler Coons is your third quarterback before DeWeaver is, with Terry being the backup. But I don't see any situation or I don't see any reason why O'Connor shouldn't be the starter.
Your third quarterback before Kohler Coons.
Whatever. I mean, either way, as long as it's not DeWeaver, I don't see any situation where O'Connor doesn't start and play full games from here on out, given the way Terry's looked so far.
Yeah, Terry's been easily the worst quarterback on the roster. And you can say what you want about O'Connor, but I'm sticking with it. Lewerke's not looked better when he's played full games. When he has played against the prevent, he's looked good. O'Connor got one opportunity against the prevent. Like I said, 3 for 4, 50 yards and a touchdown. So, I mean, O'Connor's clearly the guy. Damian Terry should never see the field again as a quarterback. You want to throw him in a wildcat, that's fine, as long as you want to mix it up and, you know, whip the deep ball to Donnie Corley every once in a while, as opposed to teams being able to stack the box like Michigan State did against Stanford when Tyler Gaffney was the wildcat guy and Michigan State's defensive back sold out against the run. And so I think that O'Connor's your guy. O'Connor is your guy right now. Lewerke got hurt. It's clearly O'Connor, and I don't think there's any question about that. That does it for us today. Be sure to check us out later this week for an Illinois preview. We got basketball preview coming up shortly within the next couple weeks. We'll try to get one in for Grant Essenmacher. I'm Tyler Haley. This was the iSports MSU Red Cedar Report.